this is James from SorrelPunk.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike with his own website, but I'm co-hosting here. How you doing today, man?
Good, yourself?
Oh, I'm itchy.
Yeah, I'm a little itchy, too. Got a little sore throat from inhaling insulation fibers.
Yeah, we were just down at the Dual Homestead, and I was helping my bro here put up some insulation.
We busted ass and got quite a bit of insulation hung up.
It's amazing the difference a second set of hands can make, isn't it?
Yeah, the last time I was out there by myself doing insulation, I skipped around and got the easy parts put in along the back wall. And then I realized to get the rest of it done, I was going to have to move 27 sheets of plywood. And I was like, fudge.
Oh, my God. It didn't look like there was much rhyme or reason. There was these done, then there was a bunch missing. It looked like a white trash woman's teeth.
Yeah, well, there was a rhyme and reason. I skipped every piece that would be difficult and or hard to do.
Yeah.
Anyone that required like extra cutting, like the piece there that had the loft board going back, and we had to cut like the little piece there and the corner pieces. But all of the downstairs now. Did we get that one? Yeah, we did get that one piece next to the door, right?
Can you really call it downstairs if there are no stairs?
There are no stairs yet. There will be probably a ladder I'll build.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then down ladder then.
Down maybe I'll put in a periscope.
Yeah. You should put in an escalator.
Oh, whatever. If anything, I'd put in a fireman's pole and just slide down the loft from the fireman's pole and then climb back up it. Put like a rope.
Oh, yeah, you should put in a rope and a fire pole.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Yeah.
That'll work like a damn charm.
Yeah.
I saw your bedroom. It was pretty narrow.
Yeah, I'm still, like I said, I'm
a little shallow.
I think I'm gonna take out that middle part on those ceiling rafters to give myself a little bit myself to give myself
to give myself a little bit of room for me part of the
yeah
wood.
Yeah. Because you also gotta think. Well, no, I was sitting on a stack of lumber, so I was a little bit higher than I would be. Because normally that would just be one layer of plywood on top there, not like the stacks that I was sitting up there on.
Uh-huh.
But I was also sitting up straight underneath it where...
You sat up straight and your head touched the apex.
Yeah, but the way I want to do it, I'll get rid of that middle support beam just over the loft, so I'll be able to sit up just a little bit higher.
You should put a skylight in.
There's a skylight in the trailer, and I thought about putting one in.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So
that'd be awesome.
Well, yeah, who knows? That's a possibility for the future. I do want to put a window in up there behind where the loft's at.
Right.
I actually kind of want to go stained glass, you know, like, because stained glass only if that small would be pretty easy.
Yeah, stained glass. You can just steal up from a church.
Yeah. Did I ever show you that someone did a stained glass Link from Zelda in their, like, kitchen? It was beautiful.
Oh, that is wicked cool.
Yes. But what do we got coming up today?
Well, coming up today on today's episode that we're doing today on this very fine day today is we're going to be talking about how to get a family of four prepped for the coming collapse. We're going to have 7 prepping tips for first-timers. Talking about getting ready for the winter. It is getting cooler earlier this year.
Yeah.
We're going to be reviewing the emergency candle heaters.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about the new recipe that you came up with for plantain biscuits, along with our Permaculture Minute Wild Edible of the Week, Mike's Paleo Report. But let's just start with a few words from our good sponsors over there at jmbullion.com.
Yes. Silver's on sale right now, so it's an excellent time to stock up on silver for monetary hedge and for barter for the future. It's getting so cheap right now, there's no reason not to. It's guaranteed to eventually go up in the future.
So buy low, sell high.
Exactly. You very well could start taking your profits. Like, I really thought about it and kind of wish I had, but I hold silver to hold it. I don't, I've not sold any. I kind of bartered some, but it was silver for silver trade.
Well, you don't want to sell it right now.
I don't want to sell it, but a lot of the silver I have, I bought back when it was $12 an ounce, back in like 2008, 2009. I should have sold some of it when it hit $50 an ounce.
Oh, man.
I should have sold a couple ounces of it then to make a little profit.
Yeah.
But I did not. Instead, I'd rather just keep it all. But
oh,
Absolutely. You know, silver is a great investment. I highly recommend you put some of your saving portfolio in silver. And I believe you should get that from JMBullion.com. They have the best prices and free shipping.
That's SurvivalPunk.com. Banner on the right-hand side for JM Bullion. Click yes. there and start making wise investments. And while you're over there, why don't you find the one from Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee as well and click that.
Right. It's getting cold and you're going to need coffee.
Absolutely. I mean, you love a good cup of coffee on a cold winter's morning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I was out at Dual Homestead with some friends, I made coffee out there, of the Mai Tai coffee, and everybody loves the Mai Tai coffee.
Oh, really?
I need to tonight, make another order, cause, you know, I support my sponsors, they support me, so I need to make an order of Mai Tai coffee, cause I drink it all. There's not a lot of it left. I've got maybe one container of it left, and I need to order more because I needs it.
You know what you should do when you order that? You should go to SurvivalPunk.com and find its banner on the right-hand side and click there.
Yes, and you know what else I will use?
What do you
The use? Discount that Mai Tai Coffee gives all Survival Punk Army members, which I'm Survival Punk Army member number 001.
Absolutely, yeah. How much of a discount do they give our Survival Punk Army?
10%.
10% if you join up with the Survival Punk Army. And you know the Survival Punk Army wants you. I scream it at you every episode.
Yep.
All right. Well, now it's time for our first news story, which is how to get a family of four prepped for the coming collapse.
Right, which I actually, when I scrolled through looking for news articles, I picked this one because you are a family of four.
Yes, I are.
Yes, yes, you are.
I am a family of four. Well, you know, I'm the head of a family of four. I'm not actually.
Right.
I mean, I got on paleo, so I wouldn't look like a family of four.
Yeah, so this comes from our buddy, MD Creekmore, over at thesurvivalistblog.net.
Alrighty, now let's see, why don't you just dive right into it there?
Because I gotten so many emails and questions about this article, I decided to repost it here today for new readers. this morning, I was trying to catch up on my email. I know how that is, buddy. I had over 1,000 backlog the other day and I finally went through and got rid of it. Anyway, I got a massive amount of email each month, just, last month over 3,000. Yeah, buddy. I opened a great one from John W. In a nutshell, John is new to prepping and hasn't really done anything prep-wise, but he has been thinking about making plans. John said he has his home on 2 acres paid off. And that he has a job and works to support his wife and 2 children, 1 6 and another 9. You can relate to that, can't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
He said he knows from all of the news and the telltale signs that something big is coming and that his main fear is a total economic collapse.
He said that he has $10,000 to spend on prep, so that he wanted to be ready as quickly as possible without all of the buying can of food here and another can another day and a few extra cans each time he goes to the grocery store. He also insists on long-term storage foods with a shelf life of 25 years or more because he doesn't want to be bothered with all the rotating and other stuff involved with stockpiling perishable foods. John's question to me was, if you had nothing prep-wise and just starting out and wanted to be ready for the next month with a budget of $10,000, what would you do and buy to be prepared as quickly as possible? 1 year plus food storage for 4 people.
All right. We're gonna make a pretty lengthy comment on this. Even though I said I was gonna make this a quick episode, we're gonna comment on this. I remember personally reading this article before. I'll answer the question below. To start, I would order the Augustin Farms Deluxe 4-person 1-year kit, the $3,999.99.
$4,000. Be realistic.
$4,000. Probably a lot more come with tax and shipping and stuff. Might seem like a lot at first glance, but considering the package will provide 21,116 total servings of approximately 1,300 calories per day per person with a 30-year lifespan, it is a really good bargain, especially for those wanting to get prepared now. The Augustin Farm products make up the bulk of my long-term storage, and I can attest to the quality and taste of their products. The honey-coated banana death slices are absolutely delicious.
Death slices.
Yes, fortified with death crisps. I would then order one of the
Survive to Thrive
100% USD organic 40-day nutritional emergency food supply buckets. Then I would top it all off with 8 gallons of cooking oil, probably something disgusting. Store it frozen and it will last a long time. 32 pounds of salt. Yes, some salt. Really? Just 32 pounds of salt? I've got like 100. Seriously, I've got like 100.
Well, you're ahead of the curve.
32 pounds of salt, yes. Some salt is included in the Augustin Farms kit above.
You're going to love the next sentence.
But salt is cheap and has so many uses, you can't have too much. Add another 30 to 35 pounds of sugar.
You can hear the stunned silence and irritation in his absence of speaking.
And add an extra 2 buckets of Augustin Farms Country Fresh, 100% real, instant dry, non-fat, dry milk.
Are you okay, man? It sounded like that one cut you a little bit.
I'm going to have comments on this article.
You think?
In the 14-pound buckets with a 20-year shelf life. Then, I would add an assortment of herbs and spices for cooking and about 10 pounds of assorted hard candies for threats.
Okay, that says threats right there. For threats? I think he meant treats, but that says for... about 10 pounds of assorted hard candies for threats for the kids.
I went into my Mike Tyson voice, and I was like, threats for the kids.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. We just lost every listener. I'm sorry, guys. Everyone's like, forget Survival Punk. Those guys are wankers.
Damn it, I was going to invite Mike Tyson onto the show.
They're making fun of me. I would also add 12 large jars of peanut butter, 24 cans of Spam, and 12 canned hams. If you drink coffee, like Mai Tai, exotic Asian coffee, be sure to add that in the amounts that you normally consume over a 12-month period. 12 months, so you need about 120 pounds of coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll get my wife through a weekend.
Yeah, I know. Oh, that one weekend I was over here, I drank like, what, 4 bowls of coffee?
One time on a vacation, we drove damn near 100 miles out of the way because this one tanker truck that says it has coffee on board... Yeah, I'll never let her drive again.
Oh, my God. I have coffee on board. And don't forget the multivitamins and extra vitamin C. Total cost around $5,500 for a family of 4.
That's over half your budget, dude.
Let's see.
Protection and foraging. If I had no firearms now, get training, I would buy a Mossberg 500 combo package with 100 rounds of double-aught buckshot, 50 rifled slugs, and 200 birdshot, preferably number 6 shot. And then I would buy a Ruger 10/22, 1,000 rounds of .22 ammo, and 5 of the Ruger Factory 25-round BX-25 magazines. Total cost around $750. Great. You read a phone book. I read a pamphlet.
You can keep reading.
Water storage and purification. I would store as much tap water as possible, limited by space, in every suitable but free container. Avoid the plastic jugs. They are weak and fall apart after a few months. That I could find. Then I would order a big Berkey water filter and a set of extra elements. Total cost around $350. Food protection. John said that he had 2 acres of paid-off property, so I would find the best place, most level sun exposure and best soil, and have the largest area that I could work tilled and add as much free organic matter that I could. Check with any local large productions, chickens, horse, and dairy farmers in your area. Most of the time, they will give you all of their manure that you need if you'll haul it away. Spread this on your newly tilled garden plot and till again. Now, cover this all with about 6 inches of straw and throw some old lumber on top and keep the straw in place. Leave it to compost in the ground over the fall, winter, and into the spring. When it's time to plant in the late spring, till it all up, including the straw, again and plant. If I did not already have gardening tools on hand, I would get a good quality shovel, hoe and bow rake, spading fork, a big box of Miracle-Gro all-purpose plant food, and a copy of Gardening When It Counts. Then I would build a small chicken coop mostly scrounged building materials and buy an 8 to 10 6-month to 1-year-old chickens and or ducks. Huh? Then I would build rabbit hutches along one side of the walls and the coop and buy 2 does and 1 buck for breeding stock. I would also plant fruit and nut trees everywhere, and I have space on my property. Total cost under $650.
That cost in no way counts for the fruit and nut trees. That budget easily goes up thousands of dollars when you consider fruit
and nut trees. When I saw $650, I'm like, that's got to be a typo.
Yeah, I don't even know what he's talking about there. Power production, I would order a 200-watt solar panel kit, garbage. Panel mount, marine battery, solar 11 battery charger, rechargeable batteries, gas-powered portable generator. Then I would have 5-gallon gas cans filled with gasoline and Stabil fuel stabilizer. Are all these Amazon links? Total cost $800. Yeah, I'd say I built a backup battery bank for about $400 or $500. It doesn't have the solar panel. So you add that in, it's probably somewhere around the $800 range. Random items. Gobbledygook. We spent too much time on this article.
If you want to read all the gobbledygook we didn't have time to read, where do they need to go?
I will include a link in the show notes to thesurvivorsblog.net. So I actually read this article before at one point, and at some point I left a comment back then, which may or may not have been approved. Let's look if I see the name. James Burnett. Burnette.
That's a weird way of spelling survival punk. This is all just so fascinating.
My comment is not in there. Maybe it was in the original post that he just reposted this there.
Well, they usually don't include comments when you put the words gobbledygook in them.
I may have said that, and I may have said cuss words. I don't know. Sometimes I'm a dick. So first of all, the guy's question when he was like, I just want to spend money, and I don't want to be bothered with the whole rotating cans and learning how to be a survivalist and taking care of my family. That's what I heard when I read his letter. He's a lazy fuck and just wants to throw some money and not worry about it ever again. Which means he's going to have in his garage a pallet full of foods that he's never tried, never eaten. It's going to sit there. And eventually, he's going to be like, oh, this whole collapse thing didn't happen. And I got this dumb pallet of food. Survivalism's dumb. You guys are dumb. And he's gonna put it on Craigslist. He's just like, hey, I got this pallet of food. When you want this, I paid like 10 grand for it like 7 years ago. No one's gonna pay you that. And eventually he's gonna sell it to someone and they'll get a good deal off of it.
To me, the whole thing just kind of sounded like one long series of commercials.
Commercials, yes. Because they're all Amazon links, affiliate links. He buys and makes money. Because if the guy wrote me this email, I would probably tell him to go fuck himself. If you are not responsible enough to take responsibility from your family's welfare, and you're just lazy, and you just want to throw money at the problem.
That's all he was wanting to do, is just, I've got a problem. I'll throw money at it.
Yes. He was retarded. I would not have wrote this article the way that he did. I teach responsible preparedness. Not throw your money away.
No, you gotta be proactive on this shit.
Yes, I mean, if you do have $10,000, for one, I wouldn't recommend you going out and blowing it all.
I would recommend giving it to me.
I would still suggest copycatting. You can do all your copycatting like at once and like fill up your pantry right away.
Oh, but so he doesn't want to do that.
Instead of going the slow way of going and buying like 2 cans of something at one time, if you know you eat like a can of Spam on a regular basis, go buy 10. And then in the same shopping trip, like, just go buy all your prep food at once.
Yeah, might as well.
And then I recently wrote about, you know, going back to basics on food preparation, food storage. Say once a month or twice a month is, something that I call, like, throwing $20 at it.
Mm-hmm.
You take $20 and you go buy $20 worth of one prep.
Makes sense.
I mean, if you go buy cases of water, that's about six to seven cases of water, depending on the deal you get. Because usually they're around $3.
Yeah, I mean, and you go to places like Aldi or something like that, or these, I mean, you can get a case of water for under $3 there.
Yeah, I mean, so usually around $2.50, $3, somewhere like that. It's a case of 24 to 32, mm-hmm. somewhere in that range. That's a lot of water.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, one time, I mean, one time I went and bought, and I didn't eat them, but, you know, I sometimes stock up on food that I don't eat, even though, okay, I preach that you stock up on food that you eat, because you eat what you store is what you eat. I prep some things that I don't eat to give away, especially cheap things, like ramen noodles. Oh, dude, I'm starving. You got anything to eat? How about some ramen noodles? I don't eat it, but a lot of people do. You know, I've had, like, girlfriends like Kim over, and she was like, oh, I want to eat food, but she doesn't eat any of the food that I did. You know, ex-girlfriends. This is past. This is years ago. So sometimes I'll go buy those Hormel Complete Meals.
Mm-hmm.
They're cheap. They're easy. You know, they store forever. I just throw them in my closet. You know, I spend $20 buying, you know, 10 of them at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they're like $2 a piece.
Something like that.
Yeah. I would carry two cases up there to the register. Because they come in cases of like five, so I'd take two cases up there.
We're not saying by any stretch of the imagination that buying one of those big food kits is, you know, a bad idea. If you got the money to fucking spend on it and you want to get, I mean, you want to get prepared really fast, I mean, I could see how that would be a good idea. But in another sense, that's not being proactive at all. That is basically just getting some other company to do all your damn work for you.
Yeah, if that's the first thing you're going to do, if you're going from not prepared to buying a case of that, I think there's better ways to spend your money.
That is straight up fear prepping.
It is, and it's not, you're not prepping for sustainable survival, you're prepping for an event. Hey, the guy even said, the economy's totally going to collapse, I need to prep. You know, and when the economy doesn't prepare, for the economy does not collapse, you know, you're like, oh, that's bullcrap, that didn't happen, I'm done, I'm out. And, you know?
I mean, in all honesty, and I know that I might catch some shit for this, I really might. Yes, I mean, a lot of people out there, including good friends of ours, you know, are, you know, fearing the impending collapse. Well, in this country, people have always been fearing the impending collapse. Since we were still under British rule, people have been fearing the impending collapse. We're not saying it will never happen. We're just, you know, just saying.
Yeah. Be responsible. Take care of your family. And you know, just take responsibility for it, you know?
I still want that guy to send me the $10,000.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next on the show, 7 prepping tips for first-timers. Not like John W. there, but other first-timers, ones that are going to be a bit more proactive about it and learn how to do the stuff.
Yes, this comes from our friends at ReadyNutrition.com. 7 tips for first-timers. What scenarios are you prepping for? Easily the biggest piece of advice on prepping you can follow is to ask yourself, what is it you are prepping for? Goes right back to what we were just talking about.
Yep.
This doesn't mean that you should put all of your prepping eggs into one basket, but instead it means that you need to have a focus on your prep. In other words, are you prepping for a tornado in Kansas? A flood in Louisiana? Makes sense. A wildfire in California? Each disaster has a majority of different approach to prepping. The basics tend to stay the same. Yeah. But important steps like storing your prep, staying mobile, and what type of first aid you keep in abundance will change. Take number 2.
Well, I just want to comment on that. I mean, that is something you got to take into consideration. I mean, because if you're prepping for a tornado in Kansas, putting all your food in the basement is a good idea, but not such a good idea if you're prepping for a flood in Louisiana.
Yeah.
All right, number 2, focus on food and water. Once you get into prepping, you'll find a vast array of tools and toys available to you. On top of this, there are more than enough prepper gimmicks and scams out there to eat up your money pretty quickly, too. Before buying that 10-in-1 axe or pop-up camo tent, focus on food and water. The ideal place to start with is a goal of 30 days worth of food and water for you and your family, pets included. Once you get to this milestone, you can add in other supplies. But the best turbo stove won't do you much good if you don't have any food or water to cook on it.
Yeah. Use lists. Highly recommend this. In the world of prepping, lists are your friend. Make a list for every aspect of your prep, from tools needed, first aid supplies, to the food you have and need. Make a lot of lists. Your best method for list taking is to get a notebook and keep track of your prep with. Writing things down is a good idea versus typing them in a computer, because if your computer goes down, you still have the list. Once you complete all the items on your list, you can keep it as a reference for what you have. Think of it as a type of reverse inventory. I disagree with that.
Really?
I do like to keep the list online, cloud backed up, using the website and app Evernote. I love Evernote. Evernote lets you log in across multiple platforms, so I can go on my computer. That's where I keep the show notes at.
Mm-hmm.
For the show. I can then access it on my cell phone mobilely. So I like to make, like, for example, if you and your wife started using Evernote, at home, she could add things to the shopping lists in Evernote. You could then check your cell phone on your way home, see that your wife needs you to pick up eggs and milk, and then you can stop by the store and get it.
You know, to that I would only add one thing. If you are going to keep your, if you are going to keep lists on the computer, just, you know, back yourself up in as much as just printing them out. It'll only take a few seconds, a few cents worth of ink. And I mean, you got something right there if you accidentally drop your damn computer off a bridge.
Yeah.
Or if by some chance the internet goes down. You know, they can break the internet.
Breaking the internet's going to be hard.
But not impossible. Okay, learn a new skill. Once you move past food and water prepping, the best thing for your prep is to learn a new skill. Remember, in an emergency situation, there won't be a repair shop to take your tools to or a grocery store to buy more food from. When the shit hits the fan, you'll be left to rely on skills you have. With no internet available to look up information on,
Yeah. You
might be stuck. This is why learning a new skill like welding, gardening, knitting, or even basic first aid can be a huge help. Taking a class on canning is a great way to prepare for the future issues and to get your prepper pantry in order now.
Yeah. Number 5. Understand how long you're prepping for. This goes back to knowing what it is exactly that you are prepping for. By understanding what it is you are trying to stave off the ill effects from, you can help determine how long your prep should last. For a typical natural disaster, you'll probably want to start off with a 1 week food, water, and supplies for the family. Not too bad. After this, you should extend out a little at a time until you get to the time frame you're looking for. The bare minimum of a solid prep is typically 30 days. I agree with that. But many people stretch theirs out to 6 or even 12 months.
Not saying there's anything wrong with that.
12 months is solid. I'm sitting on a 90-day reserve, so that's I like 90 days. Remember, the time you set to prep will determine what and when you buy. So know this first and go from there.
Number 6. All right, number 6, prep for the environment. Well, this is a useful tip for anyone starting out. It's most important for those of us that live in parts of the country where there's a big change in weather with the seasons. Remember that if you start prepping in the summer, that you need to have supplies for the winter as well. If you're prepping during a dry season, make sure to remember that floods can come too. On top of prepping for the weather, make sure you look at the environment around you before starting your prep too. If it's hilly and full of heavy woods, you should make sure that you get a few machetes and good hiking boots to get around with. In short, make sure that you think about the weather and environment you'll be prepping for, as this can greatly impact food, water, and supplies that you might use. And finally,
number 7. Stay focused and don't get overwhelmed. Oh my goodness. The last tip in this list is the most important for the first-time prepper. It is easy to get overwhelmed and scared when prepping for what basically amounts to the end of the world, as we know it. Or at least the end of the current world that you're living in. It's not so easy to truly think about getting ready to up and completely change your life over the course of a few hours. Very true. The best way to approach prepping is to stay focused and think about the task on hand. Don't think about the ramifications of your prepping while you are doing everyday tasks. Instead, think about completing a specific task. There are times when you need to sit and think about the reality of the situation, but that's not a 24/7 job. Make lists. Plan out what you're prepping for. Get some extra skills under your belt to start with, and don't get overwhelmed with planning for everything. Do your best and understand you're still ahead of 95% of the people around you. You won't ever be able to prepare for everything, so do what you can. Oh!
Alrighty. Yeah, I think that was a pretty good, I think that was a pretty good article there.
Not too terribly bad. Don't have any, bashing to do on that.
Definitely covered the basics on there, yeah.
I'm eventually going to alienate the entire internet.
Oh my god, you're
this will be pod beef everywhere.
Yep, absolutely. But pod beef?
Pod beef!
Is that paleo?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, pod, yeah.
Pod beef, yeah.
Yeah, it's a legume. Okay.
We're starting pod beef with you.
All right, and coming up on our main topic for the day, we're going to be...
it's like the old school East Coast, West Coast rapper pod beefs, or beefs, rap beef.
Okay, you're just making me hungry. It's too much beef.
Those rapists.
Rapists. All right, we're going to be talking about getting ready for the winter, boys and girls out there. The winter is upon us. It's fall here in Tennessee, and it's unseasonably cold this time of year. Well, it looks like we might be moving into a hard winter, but then again, they keep saying that every year. But getting ready for the winter is important, especially if you're in a more northerly climate. I mean, of course, I think those people were born ready for it.
Yeah, I think I got a picture from my admin, my buddy Grizz, up in Michigan, and he got some crazy snow the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard in Tennessee we had 4 snowflakes.
Yeah, about 4 snowflakes. 4.5, I think.
The end is nigh.
All right. Well, the first piece of advice I'd like to give people when prepping for the winter, you want to make sure,
house is insulated.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure your house is very well insulated.
We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, you know, check your windows, check your doors, check for any, cracks, anything like that, anywhere where air could be coming in. Plug those before it gets too late. It sucks trying to work on stuff like when your hands are freezing.
I know growing up, we used to always cover the windows with plastic and tape them off.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, back in the 80s, early 90s, all the windows were crap. Everything was single pane. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're prone to leaking air, you know.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'd like to add, if you've got rooms in your house that you don't use on a regular basis.
Block them off.
Yeah, exactly. Block them off, seal them off. And you don't even have to worry about heating that. I mean... if you got central heat and air, that air is going to be going through every room. Just shut that vent. It'll reinforce that air through the other vents. I mean, if you've got space heaters or anything like that, don't worry about that room. Seal it off. That heat will travel to the other parts. Now, speaking of central heat and air units, make sure that those you maintenance them. I mean, they're supposed to be maintenance at least once a year.
Right.
So make sure everything's up to spec on that. You have anything to add to that?
Insulating, you know, checking the windows, the door jams, doing all that stuff. It's all good stuff. I'm a big fan of not heating your whole house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my apartment this winter, I'm not moved out yet. I got another week or so, which is why I had you out there helping me insulate, the tiny house.
Yeah. Now speaking of, if you're just one person, you just heat yourself. Not the whole house.
Exactly. I mean, my apartment, when I left earlier, I think the outside temperature was 21, 22, inside temperature 65.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that is because, you know, I do block off the windows, block off rooms, use black plastic over the windows to superheat the air. You know, and my window is south facing, so that helps out a lot. And yeah, like when the temperature inside does drop down really cold, I will focus on heating myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're on the couch or something and you put down a heating blanket, it heats just you. And you can, like, it's a whole different kind of warm. Like it goes into your veins and it goes into your body and you soak in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than, you know, central air, like the whole place getting hot and warm and just, I actually get really, like, uncomfortable when the apartment temperature reaches, like, 70, 71, 72.
Mm-hmm.
Can't stand it. So, yeah, heating blankets is one thing. You know, focus on heating yourself. You know, wear a sweater.
Yeah.
You can wear a sweater right now.
Mm-hmm.
Or shirt.
I'm wearing a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Now, another thing that I recommend, you know, go ahead, and if you're a good prepper, you're already on top of this. If you need a little help, start stocking up on your food now. I mean, you never know when you're going to get snowed in.
Right.
I mean, in a lot of places, A lot of places, stores and stuff, I mean, when the bad weather starts hitting, they'll close down early, and then you're screwed. So, you know, stock up while you have time to. If you've got a wood-burning stove, start stocking up on firewood right now. I mean, not while you're listening to the podcast. Well, I mean, if you got earbuds, then you can do both. But anyway, you know, just make sure that you're ready for all that sort of thing. I think we should also talk about your automobiles as well.
Yes. I'm trying to think. Is that everything for the house? I actually, this is kind of weird, maybe counterintuitive to some people, but it makes more sense. I'm right and you're wrong. I started switching out from CFL bulbs to old incandescent style bulbs.
Interesting.
Because they give off heat. It's sort of a 2-for-1 punch. Like, you get better light. Like, I don't really care for the CFL quality of light anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I've heard it causes a lot of like, health detractions. Like people have headaches and they get sort of sick and nauseous from the light you get from a CFL bulb. And if you swap back to the old style incandescent bulbs, those headaches, those nauseas and sicknesses go away. During the wintertime, it does give off heat with your light. So if you have a light, you know, a lamp next to you when you're working, you get that heat radiating off of that bulb too.
Yeah, you got a point there. Those things, I mean, yeah, you ever tried touching one of those that right after it's burned out?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
You'll end up with blisters on your fingers.
I was looking for a heat lamp for Bjorn last year.
Just like John Lennon.
This year I got him that heating pad thing.
Has he tried it out yet?
Not really yet. It's not got cold enough in the apartment. I thought about leaving it off for him earlier when I left. I tried using it last night underneath my butt in the hammock. And it got so hot on the lowest setting, I threw it out. I'm like, oh, I can't stand that.
Oh my God. On the lowest
setting? On the lowest setting, it got too hot. I was starting to like sweat and get toasty and.
Oh, then it should be perfect for the kitty.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't think the tiny house is going to be as cold as my apartment, to be honest.
Well, it's a much smaller space.
Yeah. I mean, today when we got there, inside I felt it was fairly comfortable and I plugged up a heater. And, you know, we were able to take our jackets off, and when we were working, I felt comfortable.
No, it was very adequate.
You know, with a tiny, tiny heater in a tiny, tiny place. So, yeah, and still not even insulated yet. I mean, small heater, small place. I really want to get some wood heat, but we'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm.
We can jump into cars now.
Yeah, okay. First thing you want to make sure you got the right tools for it. Make sure you have, I would always recommend having two hand scrapers. Keep one in your truck. Keep one in the glove box.
Right. I wrote a big article on stuff to have in the car, and oddly enough, I completely forgot scrapers. Well, my article was written more or less on how to survive if you're stranded in a blizzard to live in your car. So one of the things I do is in my trunk, I keep 0-degree sleeping bags.
Yeah, it's always an important thing.
And I believe I keep one sub-zero degree sleeping bag and one 30-degree sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm.
If I need to, I could double up and go well below zero, or me and someone I get stranded with can at least keep from freezing to death.
Right.
Now, food. I keep food in the car. MREs and then some other kinds of foods. Water. I usually keep a case or more of water in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Throw in the trunk, you have a case of water. I mean, that prep alone, you have no idea how useful that is. Like,
well, those preps are good for any time of the year,
too. Any time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see. Now, another, let's see, what else is good for the winter? Okay, well, yeah, this would also be a great time. I was talking about the window scrapers. This would probably be a good time to switch out the windshield wiper fluid because, you know, you have the windshield wiper fluid that's going to clean your windshield.
Yeah.
But you know, they also have the kind that's got the de-icer in it.
Yeah.
It's always good to switch over to that. A lot of people believe in this time of year switching to a heavier weight oil, actually.
Yeah, that's... Winter viscosity is what the W stands for in oil titles. So like 5W stands for like winter degrees or something. Like I found that out when I was working at Walmart. I never knew what the W stand for. I thought it was like weight. Mm-hmm. But the W does stand for like winter.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. I hate changing oil. I can change oil. I have changed oil. I hate changing oil.
Now, another thing that people have been, force-fed their whole lives is warming your car up. Now, a lot of people believe that, you know, you got to sit there and let your car warm up for sometimes a good 10 to 15 minutes.
Especially the older cars.
On older cars, yeah, that might be true. But on the newer cars, I mean, all you really got to do is let it warm up for maybe a minute or two. I mean, it's just different mechanics than your grandfather's old Studebaker.
Yeah. A couple of the things I like to do going into winter is check the condition of my tires, mm-hmm. Mike.
Shut up.
And my battery condition. If the battery's getting to the point where it's like, it's not as good,
mm-hmm.
I'd rather change it going into winter. Because the winter, the cold weather stresses the battery, it gets hard to start, and I don't want to have battery failures in the winter.
Speaking of tires, I would recommend keeping one of those air pumps that you can plug into your lighter. That's always a good thing to have anyway, but... almost everybody at my workplace last week when the temperature like just plummeted overnight. I mean, one day it was like in the 60s, the next day it was in the freaking 30s.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard so many people said that it threw their tire balance off.
The TPMS sensor probably.
Yeah, the TPMS sensor.
Because they drop pressure.
Yeah, it drops pressure, and when things get, you know, when air gets colder or warmer, it does stuff to it.
Yeah.
It expands and contracts and screws with the pressure. And so it's always good to keep that. I mean, I keep one in my car at all times. It's really helped me out a lot.
I've got a battery jump pack in my car now, which mm-hmm. I've used.
Oh, yeah. That's always a great thing to have.
Yeah.
I've got one, too.
I mean, that's a limited shelf life, but...
No, it's always good to keep the, you know, check it at least, I'd say check it at least once a week, make sure the charge is on, it's good. I mean, you don't have to actually plug it up and charge it in every week, but always, you know, always good to check it.
Right.
Because that would be a sucky thing to be out somewhere and your battery's dead and, oh crap, I haven't charged this thing in 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
What else do I do? Oddly, I keep a portable camping cook stove in the car with backup canisters of fuel. I don't necessarily know it would be the best to run in your car, but in an emergency, you know, to boil water, if you're surrounded by snow, you can melt snow and drink that.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to keep a cook stove. You could use it for heat, possibly, and something small as a car, if you're, like, banked in by snow, crack the window and then use that, you'd probably be, you know, fairly warm.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Sorry, I'm tired.
Tired, yeah.
Just, you know, had a long day and then did all that insulation.
Right.
Wore me out. So if it sounds like I'm going sleepy by on here, you got to excuse me.
Yeah, I like to keep a small folding military shovel in the car to dig myself out.
Mm-hmm.
I combine that with, I keep snow, not snow, I keep salt in the car to melt snow. And then, you know, some kitty litter to get traction if you're stuck in a ditch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Good stuff there.
Now, if you live in an area that gets snow a lot, get yourself some good tire chains.
Yeah, I mean, here in the South, really not too big of an issue.
I don't even know where you can buy tire chains.
Online.
Online, but I don't know. I'm talking about stores.
Not here.
Everything with you is not online. Here.
I mean, there's nowhere. Tennessee doesn't have those.
I'll be able to order it, but, you know, whatever. I mean, there's not really any cause for it down here.
Right.
But up north.
I mean, I thought about getting them just for the weird, random chance during this winter, if it's really as bad as people are saying it might be.
Well, the year I met my wife, we had a huge snowstorm. I mean, it was the roughest winter I've ever seen, and I could have used some snow chains. Because that puts people all over the
road. I remember that.
Alrighty. Anything else you want to add to that?
That might be it.
For the time being.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have links to my winter prepping series, and they'll have a little bit more in-depth information that you can look into.
Alrighty. Well, I think it's about time we move on into the Gadget Punk segment. And,
this is also about heating. We avoided this during the winter series just there because we wanted to talk about this.
Yeah, we're going to be reviewing emergency candle heaters. Now, it's my understanding you've actually built one of these and tested it firsthand.
Yeah. While doing research for tonight's article, tonight's podcast, one of the articles we saw was on these emergency ceramic pot heaters. And you've not heard of them, I don't think?
No.
I'm sure your wife's seen them on Facebook. It was everywhere. Yep, she's nodding her head.
Yeah. She's seen everything on Facebook.
Right. She's seen the end of Facebook. You have reached the end of Facebook. Turn around and go back.
Okay.
So the basic premise is you use two clay pots, one bigger, one smaller. You place a smaller one inside of it. Through the bottom of the flower pots where they have the holes where the water drains out, you run a long eye bolt through the middle. You use washers to separate them so there's space in between, and then you use a nut on the bottom to secure the flower pot so it's suspended below it.
Right.
And it's not going to go anywhere. You put this over, say, a metal cookie sheet, so it's suspended off the ground. The edges of the bigger flower pot rest on it, so there's an air gap beneath it. And then beneath that, you put in four tea lights or so, whatever will fit in that space. Usually it's about four tea lights. Maybe you could fit six down there.
Hmm.
Like the tea lights? The tea lights are supposed to, instead of just go up and get hot, they're supposed to heat up the clay, like a thermal mass, and then radiate heat outward. And the airspace in between is supposed to get, like, sort of superheated and heat the mass, and then you have a radiant heater.
Well, that sounds brilliant. Why doesn't everybody do this?
Yes. I tested this and tested it and redesigned it and tested it and then fiddled with it and tested it. And then one day to thoroughly test it, I put this ceramic clay pot heater in my bathroom. You've seen how tiny my bathroom is.
Your bathroom is minuscule. There's not even really room for the bathtub in there.
Right. It's damn near a closet. So I figured if this heater had any chance of working, my bathroom, the tiniest space in the world, would be the place to put it.
Oh, how did it go?
And also, for optimal testing circumstances, when I woke up in the morning, I did this on a day off, and I was, like, busy working on the website, so I didn't leave the house that day. I woke up. I burned candles. Every time the candles went out, I would replace them immediately.
Mm-hmm.
The entire day until I went to bed, say, at 10 o'clock that night. So, say, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night.
I imagine.
The candles never stopped burning.
I imagine that kept the bathroom nice and toasty.
Freezing cold.
Freezing cold.
Freezing cold.
That doesn't seem like it worked at all.
The clay pots got hot enough that putting my hands on them was a nice hand warmer, and maybe I got uncomfortable after like 10 to 15 seconds of leaving them on there. It's like, oh yeah, I should probably take them off. It's a little hot. Touching the metal eye bolt coming out of the top, because you know it's an eye bolt, you know, you pick it up. That would burn you. If you touch the metal, you would burn yourself. It was that hot.
So, yes, the actual receptacle, the heater itself was hot, but nothing around it was.
Yes, it did not.
Seems like it kept
radiate heat. And keep heat. Well, I mean, it would be no different really than if there was no clay pot on top of it and you just held your hands over them to warm them. I mean, you know, power in, power out. You can't magically create extra energy. So, it's just, It's a tiny, tiny thermal mass and a tiny amount of heat stored. I mean,
it's a lie. It's a hoax.
It is, exactly.
And I mean, it's bullcrap.
I wrote about this and I tested it for weeks. I gave it every single chance in the universe.
Yeah, you gave it its fair shot.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
You
said you redesigned it and tried it and everything else.
I did. I fiddled with it, tried. And I called it myth busted. And I had one person, some crazy ass hippie, comment on the article and say stuff like, well, you can't Oh, and I did actually check temperature gauges. There was no noticeable raise or fall. There's no temperature difference in the room.
But what did the hippie say to you?
That she went on some crazy, like, hippie explanation of, like, infrared thermal energy, and it can't be measured, and you can kind of just feel the heat, and I'm like,
oh, bullshit! Okay, right there, I'm fucking throwing the brakes on. Oh, okay, no, it puts out heat, but you can't measure it. You know, there's no real way to measure heat except maybe a fucking thermometer.
yeah.
For the love of God. If you don't, okay, if you can't measure the heat, that's because the heat's not there.
Right.
Idiot. Let you go back to you. Never mind. And that is our official review of emergency candle heaters. In other words, buy some freaking hand warmers. If you want a hand warmer, don't buy two clay pots.
Yeah, I don't. And you know what? I still have it because I haven't broken it down and threw it away because, you know, the clay pots are, I could use them for flower pots or something. I'm going to take them out to the tiny house.
Oh, God.
And give it another go.
All right.
So I can once again debunk the heck out of it. You know what? Just real quick.
Oh, boy.
Real quick. I want to read that comment.
About what comment?
Hold on just a second.
Oh, quick, Jim.
Ceramic clay pot. I want to read this crazy hippie's comment that she put on this article.
Oh, please.
That I wrote last year, I think.
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
Was she a violent hippie?
Her name was Deez.
Nuts?
D-E-E-Z. You are all missing the real way this works.
Oh, good. Can I read it? Thank you. Let's see. You're all missing the real way this works. This works on a far infrared technology. Good luck finding info on it also. Far infrared heating radiates the heat to warm things, including people. So you will have a room in which you and the things are in are warm, but if you test it with a thermometer to test the air temp, it will seem a failure. It does work, but not in a way most people are told through their science teachings. Through their science.
I can just see her quoting it. Science.
It works on faith.
Yeah.
If you believe it's warm, it'll be warm.
Yeah.
Yeah, here you go.
The person that responded to her did it so well, and there's a couple more.
Looks like they responded with a paragraph, if I saw that correctly.
November 9th, 2014. That's
a few days ago.
Deez recommented.
Oh, God.
There was a couple more really good responses. This guy, what did Deez have to say? Despite what someone, she must have some sort of dog to hunt in this thing. Despite what someone has said about the science of this idea, I have used a version of this in RVs while camping on the plains of the U.S., in the Rockies and on the high desert for more than 30 years. Perhaps one reason it works for me is I'm crazy. I don't use tea lights. I'm a throwback. I make my own Girl Scout buddy burners. I know the Boy Scouts used to make them too, but I was a Girl Scout. Smiley face. I used to use paraffin wax, but now I've gone back to using lard, tallow, and even beeswax.
Is this Deez?
Yes. Or sometimes I even use spent cooking oil. Since I also make my own wicks, I don't have problems with sputtering either. So, but, by the way, I have three sizes according to a living electric home.
She probably makes out of bras that she used to burn back in the 70s.
Well, whatever. Fun.
Good luck with that, Deez. Alrighty, can you find emergency candle heaters over at campingsurvival.com?
I don't know, but I bet you can get some really good products to keep warm, such as like emergency space blankets.
Stuff that works.
Sleeping bags, stuff that does work. And I'm sure no crazy hippie far infrared technology that doesn't exist. They do not sell that crazy technology. They only sell proven stuff that will work that you need for bugging in or bugging out.
So find the banner on the right side of survivalpunk.com for campingsurvival.com. Yeah. Alrighty, now it's time to move into Nutrition Punk, and let's talk about your plantain biscuits. You made biscuits out of plantains.
I did. This is sort of like a spur of the moment thing I did this morning. I was cooking my normal 3 pieces of bacon, 3 eggs, and I looked over and remembered that I had some plantains that I hadn't cooked with yet. So,
and for those of you that don't know what that is, that's the tougher cousin of the banana.
Yeah, and it looks so much like a big banana and smells sort of like a banana.
It's more starchy.
Yeah, it's not sugary, it's starchy. And I remember the first time that I had a plantain, whenever I try new foods, I like to just try a piece of it raw to see what it tastes like. I almost threw up.
Yeah, plantains are one of those things that damn near requires cooking.
Yeah, and I did not eat the good, like, you know, normally you want to wait till plantains are black, and then they're actually kind of soft and edible. These are, like, pretty much yellow-green plantains.
Oh, God, no, you'd throw up trying to eat those.
Yeah. Well, the ones I have today that are yellow-green, but if you cook them, they're okay.
Now, if you're going to cook plantains, remember, you can't peel them like a banana. You actually have to use a knife to get it.
Oh, yeah. You've got to cut a slit down and, like, peel it off that way.
Yeah, a lot of people cut the tips off both ends and then make a slit. It's just easier to pull the peel off that
way. That's exactly how I did it. Yeah, and like even leather. Still then, it's sort of hard to peel off. So, I mean, I winged this recipe. I didn't like really try too hard. I just diced up the plantains into little pieces, threw it in the food processor, added 1 egg,
mm-hmm.
salt and pepper,
mm-hmm.
blended, and then I poured out a bit of the batter into the skillet with the bacon fat, you know, and cooked on both sides until golden brown and delicious.
Sounds more like a pancake.
Kinda. It's more like a fried flat cake.
Fried flat cake.
But, you know, it was biscuity size is what I was aiming for.
Oh, okay.
And before I've made, if you do that same recipe minus salt and pepper with a banana, so 1 banana, 1 egg equals a pancake,
mm-hmm.
You can make paleo pancakes that way.
I'm gonna have to try that, cause I love me some pancakes.
You need to cook it on low temperature though.
Well, yeah.
For like 10 minutes, and then flip it.
That's a long cooking time.
Otherwise, it's super fragile and just, it doesn't work. Yeah, low heat, 10 minutes.
Flip. Low heat, 10 minutes?
If you cook any higher than that, you'll just burn it and it won't cook through.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to try that.
And that'll spread out. The plantain batter, as you can imagine, very thick.
Oh, God, yeah.
Very thick. Kind of like a dough almost. Even with the 1 egg in it. So, you know, I plopped it down in there, and it formed its, like, little biscuit shape and just sat there while I, you know, used a spatula to get bacon fat on the top so I can cook it that way, and then finally flipped it over, and it, you know, it formed like a tight little, it reminded me of, like, hot water cornbread.
Oh, okay.
So that little round corn kit, oh, it's so good. put a little butter on top, grass-fed Kerrygold butter. So good.
Yeah, plantains actually have a lot of uses in the paleo world. You can even use it to make taco shells.
I'm going
to
do that one.
Yeah, I'm definitely.
I want to say, what was it, just plantains and egg too?
Yeah.
Or was it water?
No, egg. It was plantains and like salt and water.
Okay, it was salt and water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to try that one. I saw a recipe for plantain biscuits, which is kind of what gave me the different plantain crackers. They spread it out on a tin and they baked it for a long time and made crispy crackers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, so yeah, definitely try that. Are you gonna have an article about it on the site?
I'll probably like perfect the recipe a little bit more and then write about it.
Yeah, so look for that on the site. All right, and now it is time for our permaculture minute.
All right,
and this comes to us from Paul Wheaton's deck of permaculture playing cards, and let's see.
If you read really fast, we'll come in under an hour.
No, we won't. All right, let me see here. I can never keep track of which side I start from. All right. Okay, this week we're doing the Ace of Clubs, and that is, Hugel culture?
Hugel culture. Hugel I think culture. You've read that, haven't you?
Have I?
So too.
Okay, well, screw it. All right, let me... No, I couldn't. It's in the non-red good. We sound so professional tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, fine. Then we're doing the Seven of Diamonds, which is upside down. Replacing irrigation with permaculture. Nature has dozens of ways to get water to plants. By emphasizing these tendencies, your favorite plants can get ample water without any irrigation in some of the driest areas. Hugelkultur, polyculture, paddock shift, berms, mulch, key lime, edge shades, terrace swales, stacked rocks, air well, many more. Raise humidity for more morning dews, water features less, less transplanting, more seed starting. The man who planted trees, the more taproot species, swales cause water and nutrients to soak in. Nature is great at irrigating itself. Grow your food the way nature does and put away the hoses. All right, and that has been our permaculture minute, and now it is time for our wild edible of the week. And this week's wild edible of the week is going to be coming out of the Forager's Harvest, a guide to identifying, harvesting, and preparing edible wild plants.
I think we need to do a whole episode on pine trees one week.
Oh, and this week we're going to be talking about the marsh marigold or cow's lips or cowslip. All right, the marsh marigold, Caltha palustris, is a distinct and easy...
All right, Mike Tyson.
Shut up. And
Cavip.
You son of a bitch. Is a distinct and easily recognized plant. It has It has numerous
leaves. And on that bombshell.
Rising on long stalks from the base and a few short branching flower stalks. The basal leaves, when matured, are roughed and can grow up to 7 inches across. At the time when they are gathered and the plants are in bloom, however, most leaves are 1 to 3 inches wide. Let's see. As its name implies, this plant is an inhabitant of wet ground. It is generally found in shade or partial shade and only rarely in full sun. Across the northeastern U.S. and almost all the wooded regions of Canada and Alaska, marsh marigold is available for foragers. Now, cowslip, as previously mentioned, is an early spring plant. While at certain sites one finds small leaves as soon as the snow melts or even under it, more often the greens are unavailable until the ground thaws in spring. Truly underway around here that, let's see. Okay, and if you want to learn more about that, you go to the Forager's Harvest, a guide to identifying, harvesting, and preparing edible wild plants by Samuel Thayer.
I'll include an Amazon link to the book so you can buy it and I can make 3 pennies.
There you go.
Along with like 37 other Amazon links so you can buy stuff with.
Absolutely. Alrighty, and now it's time for Mike's Paleo Report. Not much has been happening on the Paleo this week. I've been just trying to stay the course, and I actually happened to get those 3 pounds back off, so I'm back down to 260.
Oh, nice. I've got a quick announcement. Possibly by the time this podcast comes out, I ordered a new SOE special operations equipment belt, Cobra
Commander,
Cobra Riggers belt, which is a highly prized belt to have in the tactical survival world, which means I will be giving away the belt that I'm currently wearing to one lucky person that can wear a size 40 belt, because I swapped down to a size 36 belt.
I could probably wear a size 40 belt.
I was going to let you try it on, see what you think. But yeah, I'll be giving it to someone on the website.
I don't want to try it on then.
You can try to see if you can fit a size 40 belt.
Yeah, I'll try it.
Yeah. I might be having a giveaway to, John made the belt for me, so I don't want to sell it, but I'll give it away. And, I bought a new belt. So, this one's cool. I'll put up a contest when it's time to get rid of it.
All right.
And with that.
Okay. And with that, it's time to talk about the good people over at Well Food Co.
Well Food Co. by John Wellborn, his wife, Rob Wolf. Good paleo foods. It's the holiday season. It's a good time to snack on good snack foods for the season, like paleo, soy-free, dairy-free, peppermint chocolate bars. So good. I might give you and your wife some for Christmas. Paleo cookies that I think I made your wife try when I was over here on cheat day. The Paleo MRE, the Carne Bars, so good. What?
Was any of that the stuff that had insects in it?
No, that's different stuff.
Okay.
Well Food Cove is insect-free, organic, high-quality, amazing.
Because you terrified my daughter with that day.
Yep. Did I make your wife try the paleo MRA, and I think she loved it?
You might as well have told her that she'd just eaten a baby.
That was the best. I'm buying her Exo bars for Christmas.
Yeah.
Shut up, James.
Alright.
I can't believe you did that on the show.
Yeah.
Alrighty, but the banner on the right-hand side for Well Food Co., and there's also a banner on the right-hand side for Freedom Munitions on the podcast. What can they get over at Freedom Munitions?
Bullets. The largest direct-to-consumer manufacturer of reloaded and new ammunition in the United States, Freedom Munitions. Good place, good deals. I actually may go buy a bunch of ammo for them because I'm thinking about stocking up on 1,000 rounds of 223 ammunition. And I suggest you do that too. So go to survivalpunk.com, click the banner in the right-hand margin, and buy some ammunition.
And if you want to have a banner on the right-hand margin of survivalpunk.com, contact James at survivalpunk.com. If you've got something to sell and you want us to sell it, if it has anything to do with survival, fitness, paleo, or punk music for that matter, anything like that, just contact James at survivalpunk.com. And now it is time for Mike's Celebrity Invite of the Week. You know what? I'm fed up with celebrities. I don't want to invite one. No, I'm just joking. Yeah, this week's celebrity invite goes out to somebody that I've actually invited onto the show previously because I'm not giving up on him.
Oh, yeah?
I am not giving up on him. This might be the third invite, but Les Stroud, please listen to my invites. I'm begging you now. Please come onto the show. You're my survival hero, man. So once you learn how to fish correctly, please, you have an open-ended, open-door invite onto survivalpunkpodcast.com. Or Couch Potato Mike Explains It All over at couchpotatomike.com, for that matter. First episode out. All righty, and let's see. The Survival Punk Army wants you!
Discounts to vendors, ebooks, exclusive content, downloads of the Survival Punk Podcast in easy zip files of 1 to 10.
Did you say zzzz a minute ago? Yeah, you get extra if you're a Survival Punk Army member.
Yes. Check that out. Help support the show, me and Mike, and my crazy adventures on the homestead.
Absolutely. Just find the link on the site. Join up. You can get memberships and different links. Because you know why you need to? Because the Survival Punk Army wants you.
Heck yeah.
Alrighty, I think it's time to wrap things up. I think it's been a pretty good show. We're definitely putting the punk in survival punk these days.
Yes, we are very punkish.
I think you told somebody to go fuck themselves earlier.
Yeah. Sometimes people need to be told to go fuck themselves.
Yep.
But not you guys. You guys are awesome.
Yes, you guys are awesome. So join up. Tune in for next week's episode. Same bat time, same bat channel. For Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James, the sick one, Burnett.
And remember, if you're going to stay warm during the winter, flower pots are for flowers.
DIY to survive.